Talking about money is hard. People all over the world were taught never to talk about money, politics, sex, or religion in polite company. But on this show, my goal is to remove money from that list. And so I'm excited to bring you 50 Fires, a podcast about money and meaning from Blind Nil Audio and executive producers Chip and Joanna Gaines. Follow and listen to 50 Fires, a podcast about money and meaning with me, Carl Richards, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Emily Thomas, and you are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. Guys, welcome back. If you are new, how exciting. We are so glad you're here. And by we, I mean me, because it's just me sitting in my closet recording this. I hope this episode really encourages you on your mom journey. This episode is the 70th episode, and I have the opportunity to talk to my friend Lynn. Before we get started, though, I just want to say this is an episode that you may not want to listen to with your little kids. I know my kids never want to listen to my show. They hear me jabbering on for long enough anyway, but if you do sometimes listen with your kids, this one has got some mature content. I just started cussing a lot during this one. I'm just kidding, that's not true. But we are gonna be talking about pornography. My friend Lynn unfortunately became an expert on pornography and the effects of pornography when it invaded her marriage. And so she knows a lot about it. We talk about the brain science behind it, how to talk to your kids about it. What exactly is the definition of affair? Is a pornography addiction an affair? And how did they practically rebuild their marriage? It's a really good conversation. It's really necessary. Unfortunately, a lot of people won't talk openly about it. And so I feel like it's an important topic. But we haven't done this in a while, you guys, so I just need everyone to circle up, and we're gonna have a quick staff meeting. You guys, if you're new here, you don't know this yet, but you are the marketing department of the Mom Struggling Well podcast, and I periodically want to cast a vision for how you can help get the word out about the show. First, I'm really thankful that you tell your kids and your husband about it, but they're not exactly our target demographic, and I do not know if it's really helping to talk to them. So we need to like branch out. So the other day I was driving down the road and I saw those Chick-fil-A billboards with those cows, you know, where there's like one cow standing on the other cow's back and they're like painting "Eat More Chicken" or whatever. And I thought, okay, how did those cows even get up there? I did not even know cows could climb ladders. And if cows can climb ladders, we should be able to climb ladders, you guys. I need to see more moms vandalizing billboards. Just moms standing atop moms. Pick whichever one of you seems the lightest. Put her on top. Have her paint some things. You can, you know, talk about the mugs. You can talk about your favorite episode. There's so much freedom of what you paint. I just need to see some more moms making billboards. That's what I'd like to see. So get with your friends, find a good night, put it on the calendar. Send me a picture on Instagram. I super can't wait to see it. I was talking on Instagram stories about Aldi, how I'm doing an experiment to see how much money can I save if I only go to Aldi all month. So my first trip, though, I had forgotten the quarter. You know how you need a quarter to get the cart. And so I was just carrying everything around, and it was all heavy stuff like a gallon of milk and orange juice and canned goods. And oh my gosh, it was all so heavy. I thought my arms were going to fall off. But yeah, so the Aldi thing so far is going good. We're like a quarter of the way into the month and we've already saved a lot of money. Don't you worry. I will be giving you updates periodically about my grocery bill because I know that was what everybody was wondering about. This week, I am going to be talking to Rebecca Smith and we're going to do another problem solved. And the topic is meal planning. And you guys have so many opinions. They're hysterical. I love hearing from all of you. So I can't wait to talk about that with Rebecca. And that'll come out sometime next week as we solve all of y'all's problems about meal planning. But let's go ahead and get started on my talk with Lynn about marriage, betrayal, and pornography. Hey, Lynn, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. I'm good. Where do you live? What state do you live in?
Live in Texas, Austin area. So.
Okay. Me too. I'm in Dallas. I realized, you know, I just don't even know where half the people live anymore.
It's a big place. It's a good place.
Yes. It's fun there. Austin's fun. So will you tell us a little bit about you and your family?
Yeah, I have been married for 25 years. My husband David and I met actually in Oklahoma. I went to college there and he went to Bible college there. So we met through a mutual friend when we were both going to school. Actually, he was already done with school, but I was still a student, and we got married in my hometown, which is Bismarck, North Dakota.
Oh my gosh, I have family there.
What?
That's random. That's not a big place.
We are probably related.
That is so funny. Cousin Lynn.
Mm-hmm, we're related. Probably.
That is so random. Okay. So yes, you got married in Bismarck?
Yeah, we got married in Bismarck. It was a beautiful day. Took our pictures at the Capitol grounds, which is what you do if you live in Bismarck.
Okay.
About 6 years later, we had our first son, Michael. Okay. 3 years after that, our second son, Daniel. So I have two boys who are now 16 and 19. That's okay. Crazy.
So two teenagers.
Yes.
Is it as fear-inducing as you thought it would be?
You know, I was terrified of teenage boys. I just was picked on mercilessly in high school. So I remember just being scared of teenage boys. And now I have two of them and they're awesome.
Okay.
And I love their friends. And
me too.
Parenting teenagers is no joke, but they're really great boys and they have great friends. And I'm not afraid of teenage boys anymore.
Okay. So have they had friends that you're like, that guy's bad news, or not really?
You know, I can't think of a single one.
Okay.
They just, my oldest especially, he's pretty cautious. And so he's really picky about his friends, especially his inner circle. My youngest is more of a free spirit. But even in that, I don't think there's ever been anyone I was iffy about.
Okay.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I like all my kids' friends, but they're so little that I don't really have anything to worry about yet. I find stuff to worry about. Don't worry. But I don't need to. Okay. So you told me about your mom, and I just wanted to start off with this. I think the interview is going to take some little bit darker places, so I wanted to start off with something light. So your mom, you said, loved in a really specific way.
Yes, she's just really in tune. I don't know where she files it away. We're going to find, you know, a secret notebook somewhere where she's recorded everything, but she seems to just have this uncanny ability to remember what people love, what makes them happy. You know, like every year on my birthday, she would make me a lemon cake.
Okay.
Just something she knew I loved. And so it became this thing that she did every year. And, you know, she came and spent Christmas at our house a couple years ago. And when she did, I was just blown away. Like, she made Chex Mix for my husband, extra spicy.
Because he likes that.
Yes. She made these cinnamon twists, which are just delicious with a little bit of cream cheese frosting. She made those for my boys. And then she made those peanut butter blossom cookies with a Hershey's Kiss.
Yes.
My favorite Christmas cookie, she remembered. And she just is always great at loving with acts of service and just remembering those little things that you enjoy. Yeah.
I never remember. I'm not good at that.
I am not either.
Have you ever asked her, like, how do you remember?
I don't think I have, but I probably should. I just remember that particular Christmas when she was at my house and I saw her loving and serving us all in such a particular way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really need to be more like that.
Yeah, that's something to aspire to.
Mm-hmm.
Even like if I could put like notes on my phone or something, because sometimes when my friends have birthdays, I'm like, oh, what are they like? I don't know.
That's a great idea.
But then if someone finds it, they're like, that's creepy. So you got to find a non-creepy way to do it.
That'd be good.
Okay, so something that you, which I thought this was really funny, the thing you can't stop talking about is really funny because it's porn. You said you asked your kid, what can I not stop talking about?
Yeah. Porn.
Tell me a concern that you have with kids and porn, and because it's my concern too, but I'm so, like, again, I have a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old, so I'm on the other side of this. So tell me about it.
I've had the opportunity to attend some conferences in October, and so I attended the Lone Star Coalition Against Pornography and the Coalition to End Sexual Exploitation Summit in Houston, and actually the Society for the Advancement of Sexual Health. So I have just dove into this world in October.
That seems really heavy. Do you leave like encouraged or discouraged?
It is heavy. You know, that's a I think I have been pretty discouraged, but with the overwhelming influence that pornography has in our culture. But at the same time, just also feeling empowered, like I have a voice and I have to talk about this, you know, knowing that there's something that I have to say and I need to speak up.
Okay, so what do you have to say? Tell us some things.
Okay. Well, for this is the big thing I've been talking to my kids about, which, you know, they're like, no teenager wants to talk to his mom about porn. I'm like, I'm sorry, but we're going to talk about it.
Okay. How do you start that?
It's very awkward. It's weird. But, you know, what really works great is when we're in the car going somewhere, because then they're trapped, you know, they're stuck. Okay. And so,
okay. And
yeah,
no one's looking eye to eye. So that must be nice. You're kind of like facing the same direction. Okay.
Yeah. So just one of the things that I've really been studying and looking into more and more is just the brain science behind it. Okay. And understanding, you know, how pornography lights up that feeling center of our brain, the reward center of the brain. And it's very similar response to the effect drugs and alcohol have on us, only it's not a chemical we're adding to the brain. But we're still having this chemical response like we would to alcohol or cocaine. So the brain is releasing dopamine and delta-phosb, and it's also, like with pornography, releasing hormones like oxytocin, that's a bonding hormone. Mm-hmm. So it's just blown my mind how it's, you know, forms this addictive rut in the brain. And eventually, after more and more exposure, dopamine receptors get desensitized. And so then you need like novelty mm-hmm. to have the same rush, that same high. Yeah. And so people are looking at needing to find new things to see and looking for that novelty so they can experience that rush, and finding that their sexual taste is changing and that things they're looking at now they would have been disgusted by a year or two ago. And and a lot of it has to do with that brain science and just the response that our brain has. Okay. And taking us away from that thinking, rational, analyzing part of our frontal lobes and just to that reward center.
Okay. So what do we do? Like, what do those conversations look like with our kids?
You know, I think one of the big things is dealing with your own story, your own sexualization, you know, and not bringing your baggage into the conversation.
Okay.
You know, a lot of us have experienced pain and difficulty in our own sexual story. And so not bringing that into the conversation with our kids, but knowing like, kids are going to be curious. Hmm. And so, like, to see a pop-up picture of like something you've never seen before, curiosity is a very natural and normal response. Mm-hmm. But just empowering them, one of the easiest things to do is if you see something and, you know, it creates like this really super curious feeling, I want to see more of that. Or if you feel like icky, like it gives you a stomach ache and something just seems strange, let's talk about it.
Okay.
Setting yourself up as the best source of information for any questions they have.
When do you suggest that conversation?
Oh, I think, you know, I look, even in my story, my husband was 7 years old when he first encountered pornography. Okay. He and his buddy found a stack of magazines in the woods behind their house, and they took them to their treehouse in the neighborhood. Seven, like that's second grade. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think there are age-appropriate ways to have those conversations, and that conversation isn't going to look the same at 12 as it does at seven.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's a question of if your children are going to encounter pornography. It's a question of when.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
Yeah. I know. It's concerning because I think they're not going to tell me that they saw that.
Right, right. I really think you have to have the conversation proactively. And there's some, you know, some great books out there for children. There's Good Pictures, Bad Pictures.
Okay.
Porn-proofing Today's Young Kids, that it's a read-along, you know, for parents to read with their children. There's some discussion questions. And I think you just have to be proactive, and you have to let your children know that they're going to encounter pictures where people don't have a lot of clothes on. And this is what you should do when you see a picture like that. Hmm. I think we want to equip them ideally before they encounter it.
Yeah, it seems like you would just want to not talk about it so that they won't look for it, right? You know what I mean?
Right.
But I think you're totally right. You have to say something. Mm-hmm. And we have, and it is awkward. And a lot of times they're just like, okay, well, what about, you know, let's talk about koala bears. I'm like, okay, great.
I would rather talk about koala bears.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's like sinking in, but still.
I think that's okay. But hopefully when they run across something like that, they'll know that they can talk to you about it.
Yeah. And I think too, being safe in regular conversations so that they know you're not going to flip out. That's what I've been working on, is not freaking out about regular things.
Yes, you know, so right.
Being That's safe huge. All the time. Oh, man. Okay, so let me just ask you, because you just wrote a book about betrayal in marriage. And I was wondering, does this, because your interest in porn have anything to do with that? Or how did you get into where your interest in speaking out against porn?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely comes from my experience. And, you know, I was just talking to someone today about how there's a price you pay to be an expert or at something and, or, you know, write a book. Usually, often, I think it comes from a struggle.
Absolutely.
So, yes, I remember thinking early on in my marriage, something wasn't quite right. Okay. But at the same time thinking, I don't want to really know what it is. And it's probably not a big deal. And
how far along in your marriage?
Probably a couple of years for sure into it, just thinking like something doesn't quite seem right.
But you didn't want to talk about it.
But yes, not wanting to talk about it. And then falling prey to some of the ideas like, oh, sex is for men. Sex is all about men.
Okay.
Believing some of those lies and letting that settle in. But then when I was pregnant with our first son, and we had just bought a new home and had just wired our home for this brand new information communication tool called the internet.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. So, you know, which nobody really knew what it was then. It was like, wow, this amazing new fangled thing.
Yes.
So, you know, I just remember being big, being pregnant, like struggling with my body image, being tired, and yet walking by our home office and just feeling like something's not right in there, and knowing probably something's happening that's not good. But at the same time, you know, always choosing denial. That's my coping mechanism of choice. And I grew up in a sweep it under the rug kind of family. So that's what we did. And just chose to do that. And so it wasn't until my second son was born, we brought him home from the hospital. And that was an incredible experience. My first labor was 20 hours and cesarean.
Okay.
And he was like 9 pounds.
My goodness.
Yeah. So that was rough. And then I just somehow got the courage to labor again. Like, because they would have totally scheduled the second cesarean for me. But I'm like, I think I'm going to go for it.
Okay.
So then my second son was born in 20 minutes.
No way. Wow.
Yes. I did a lot of laboring at home. And I remember taking a bath and thinking, oh, I'll probably have a baby tomorrow.
Okay.
No, like he was literally born 20 minutes after we got to the hospital. And so that's just amazing. Feeling like I can do anything. I have just given birth to a child in the conventional way.
in less than the time it takes to watch a sitcom. So.
Yes. Just really feeling happy and powerful. And I remember feeding him one night and the light was on in the home office. And in that moment, in that mindset, I was like, this is awesome. I'm not the only grown up awake in the middle of the night. Mm. And so I just opened the door, but like instantly felt something that like a tangible thing, and just felt lust and felt shame, like a 1-2 punch.
Really?
I saw pornography on the screen. Mm. You know, so there, this thing that I think is not quite right is right in front of my eyes.
Okay.
And yet it did what I had always done, shut the door and walked away.
What was that moment like?
When I look back at that night, I know that I began a slow process of dying. Like that was the beginning of the death of me. Mm. And just a feeling like, okay, my life is over. I will probably never be happy again. This marriage is probably never going to be good. And really, I just have to do whatever I can to let my kids have the best life that they can. And, you know, in that moment, choosing to do whatever I could, do the best I could to provide a happy home for my children, because it was easy to relinquish my happiness, but I wasn't willing to let go of theirs.
So your husband knew you saw or not?
Now, I don't think he was really fully aware that I saw what happened in that room, and we never talked about it.
Okay.
And so I just went on pretending for 4 more years, pretended and stuffed and coped and denied. And
man, that's a long time.
Oh, I know. I call them the lost years. And I have just thought, why didn't I have the courage to face that? But you know what ultimately brought my willingness to address the issue was that I ended up getting really angry.
Okay.
And I just became an angry woman. I remember living like this constant low level irritation with our kids. Mm-hmm. Like my husband, he is the neat person in the family. He just is organized. I am the messy one. And I remember walking by the bed and he would have a pair of socks laying by the bed, which was unusual. And I would just think, oh, this is so horrible. These two socks. You know, how could he do that? And, like being angry and swearing. Yeah. And I had never sworn in my life.
Hmm.
And just, you know, knowing now everything I had stuffed in for all those years, there was no more room. And it just came seeping and spewing out. And
were you guys like church people? Were you walking with God or what was your...
We were like not only church people, we were professional church people.
Professional church people. Okay.
Yes. Because we were both on staff at our church when this is happening in our story. I know.
Was there any kind of talk about it in your church at all? Was that brought up or it didn't happen in the church, quote unquote?
I don't think it was ever brought up in a church service. But I will say this, you know, when I realized I don't like who I'm becoming and I need help, and I reached out to a friend at the church, they were amazing. Mm-hmm. And they resourced us with an incredible counseling group here in out of Austin, affairrecovery.com.
Okay.
They really supported us in our recovery. So even though it wasn't something like that we talked about at church, that we had a great awareness of from the pulpit or in our services, when I reached out for help and when we reached out for help, they were incredible. And they really walked with us through that journey.
Okay. Let me just pause for a second and ask you. So you're telling me that you would consider pornography an affair for somebody who wants to say, it's not that big of a deal. Like, I shouldn't be so mad about it. I'm overreacting. My husband says I'm overreacting. Or there's a lot of women who look at porn and maybe they're saying that, you know, that it's, everybody tries to downplay their sin. We like to hide it. We like to pretend like it's not a big deal. So you're saying that that's an affair.
You know, I would not have said that. And I remember telling myself those exact same things, like, it's not like he's cheated on me. He didn't have an affair. There's not another woman. But what we learned through therapy is they classify an affair as the keeping of secrets.
Okay.
So anything that you do in secret is a betrayal, and that can be an affair. And also just walking through therapy, and we did 48 weeks of therapy, and going through that, seeing how my recovery with someone who was addicted to pornography was very similar to someone whose husband had been or whose wife had been with an affair partner. Mm-hmm. There's still that betrayal trauma. There's still this feeling like my marriage isn't what I thought it was. Yeah. And so the recovery and the healing process is so similar.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, we wouldn't have said there was an affair in our marriage. I would have never said that. But knowing what we know now, I definitely see it as taking something that is meant to be between you and your wife and sharing it, maybe not with one individual, but sharing it with this fantasy world online.
Did your husband think that it was an affair as well?
Not until we began getting help.
Because it's hard if you feel like in your heart that it is, but you're being told by your spouse that it's not, and calm down.
That is hard. I know that, you know, neither one of us saw it in that way until we began getting help and realizing what a stronghold it had on him and the effect that it had on our marriage, and thinking, okay, yeah, this is definitely a betrayal. And I remember sitting in our very first therapy session, there was a graduate student doing work for his thesis. So there was a survey for us all to fill out, you know, for the sake of science.
Okay.
And
which is really what you're interested in when you're going through a trauma.
Right. You're like, my life is a statistic now. But I remember filling out the form, and both my husband and I, so we're filling out this form, and in the bottom right hand corner are the instructions, circle one, and then two words, betrayed or betrayer.
Hmm.
And in that moment, I remember thinking, oh, I've been betrayed.
Hmm.
It was a moment of owning the reality of what had happened. And my husband had a very similar response where he looked at that and thought, well, I'm not the betrayed. I guess that makes me the betrayed. And so it was a slow process of owning what it was that had taken place and realizing too that his use of pornography had become an addiction. I know it's hard to say. It's hard to say that pornography use is an affair, but you know, we definitely see it now that that's what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My husband, and I've shared this before and I do it with his permission, but there was one event with a person and it was not a relationship. And so I even feel like he will say he had an affair and I feel like, well, that's not an affair. Like an affair goes on for years and it's your secretary and you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But it's like sometimes you calling it what it is, it can be really hard to make yourself do that somehow, but it's healthy, right? To say.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think owning the reality of your life is the first step to finding freedom.
Yeah. What was it like on a daily basis, like on a Tuesday afternoon when you're both making a sandwich in the kitchen, when you're going through all this, was there a lot of tension? Was there like a release because you're finally talking about it?
Yeah. I think there was almost a sense of immediate relief for my husband in that the secret is out.
Okay.
And so he doesn't have to try to keep this thing under wraps or covered anymore. And here's the beautiful truth about my husband is that he wanted freedom. And when we started going to therapy and he got the tools that he needed and learned about understanding triggers and knowing safeguards to put in place, like he just did the work.
Okay.
He didn't want this thing in his life. And when he found out the path to breaking free from it, he did the work. And I watched him do that. But so Tuesdays were fine because we were both at work. And so, you know, we were fine at work. Okay. Fridays, on the other hand, Fridays were really hard because, you know, now my husband has a sense of relief, but now I am having to deal with the truth of my life, which I have coped with denial for, you know, like 6 years and dealing with the trauma of the reality. So yeah, it was hard. And I remember just thinking every Friday we would take the boys to school and we were both off on Fridays.
Okay.
Thursday night, I would start to get worried because I knew probably we were going to fight. We'd end up fighting. And yeah, you know, plus we went to our therapy sessions on Thursday. And that, you know, just doesn't always make you feel happy and accomplished when you leave. Like, it stirs up the issue. There were a lot of Fridays that were filled with turmoil and arguing, and it was a struggle for a long time.
What was your work involved? Like your healing, was there ownership of a part that you played? Did you play a part? For a wife who's in the middle of this, like what is she supposed to do?
Yeah, I think knowing that I can't fix my husband and he can't fix me. Like we can make the journey easier for each other. You know, my husband being willing to answer my questions, being as gracious and patient as possible and understanding that for me, I felt like the rug had been pulled out from under me. So, you know, basically you have an addict and a trauma victim trying to figure out how to live together. And so it just takes definitely a lot of grace with each other and a lot of prayer. You know, one thing that is just amazing how God works, but I ended up dealing with anxiety and chest pain. And, you know, I went to the doctor and got my heart checked out. My heart was fine. But typically at night, we'd go to bed and my heart would just be racing. And I was so scared. And I just remember, laying in bed and feeling like I need to ask David to pray for me. And I'm like, I don't want to ask him to pray for me because I really don't want to need anything from him right now. And just feeling like, no, I need to ask him to pray for me. And so I remember like he's the only grown up around and just, you know, just saying, I need you to pray for me. My chest hurts. I can't sleep. And so he'd be like, God help my wife go back to sleep. And you know, and
moving.
Right. And then, you know, another time just feeling like I can't sleep. I have this chest pain. I need to ask David to pray for me. And I'm like, oh, I need you to pray for me. And like, God help my wife go back to sleep. And I'm like, I need you to really like lay hands on me and pray for me. And you know, he did. And so we turned toward each other through that, where I realized even though I didn't want to need anything from him, I did need him. Even though, you know, here I had brought this ugly thing in his life out into the light and it was difficult and challenging and I wasn't being very easy to love. And yet now I'm asking him to pray for me. But those nights and those prayers really did help turn our hearts toward each other. And God used that in an amazing way to bring us back to the same same page.
That's great. Okay, so I think I made you skip over this, but were you the one that you're the one who brought it into the light, or he is, or how did that all happen?
Yes. So I did make the very first phone call to a therapist. Actually, I was at a women's conference and there were these princess skits. This is a total tangent, but it's a good story. So the princesses are all there and there's some sort of trauma and one of them collapses and falls to the stage. So we realized she's Sleeping Beauty.
Okay.
Well, she did this every single skit. Something would happen. She would collapse and faint, fall to the stage, sleep through the rest of the scene. Like the other girls would drag her off the stage. Okay. And it was so funny and everyone was laughing. But I remember at the end of the conference, staring at her laying on that stage and seeing me and just feeling like the Holy Spirit pulling on my heart saying, you have got to wake up. You can't sleep through this anymore. You have to wake up.
Interesting.
And I went home from that conference and I remember, and my husband and I both remember, like I was actually in bed. He was standing at the end of the bed and I just told him like, we need help and you need help and I need help and I'm going to call a counselor and you can either come with me or not, but I have to go.
Okay.
And he came with me.
Was there a fear because you guys are in ministry of
Absolutely.
Doing something like that?
Yes, of course. I remember going to that first therapy session thinking, who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah.
Is our marriage going to make it? Are we going to get fired?
Yeah.
Not knowing what's going to happen, but at the same time being so desperate to not live the way we had been living for so long. But here's the funny thing, the crazy thing is I initiated that therapy, but then getting there and having to tell our story and face reality was so brutal for me. You know, knowing my coping is denial.
Oh yeah, that's
It just
true.
Felt like torture.
Wow.
So our first session, every couple has to share what qualifies them to come to the class.
Okay.
So we all tell our stories and we've never told this story before. And then in the second week, a new couple joined. So we all have to tell our stories again.
Oh man.
And the third week, a new couple joined and another couple left. We have to tell our stories again. And I remember on my way to the fourth class telling my husband, if there's a new couple and we have to tell our stories, I quit. I am
You're
walking
out.
I am not doing it. But you know, even by then, by that fourth week, he was finding hope and knowing he was not alone. He was not the only man that struggled, that he wasn't a bad person and that there was a path to freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were many weeks where he's like, come on, we are going to class. We're not skipping. And so even though I initiated that process, once he began to find hope, he was committed to doing the work.
So when did you finally start telling other people? Because I know when we had our experience of infidelity, it was... I, at the same time, wanted to scream it from the rooftops, like, this guy's terrible, and at the same time, he's my best friend, and I wanted to protect him. But I felt like if I didn't tell somebody, I wasn't being honest with myself. Like, how can I be myself in this situation, but at the same time, want to protect his, you know, reputation or whatever? So how did you do that?
We knew really early on that God was asking us to tell our story.
Okay.
And part of the reason is that, you know, my husband had tried multiple times over the years to try to get someone to engage on this topic.
Okay.
And he approached other staff members at churches we worked with, and no one would go there with him.
Okay.
So, you know, once we walked through this and came out on the other side, like he knew he would talk about it because he wanted to offer that hope to other people.
Okay.
He was the first person. He actually spoke at a men's event and did a breakout session and shared his story. And I think that's the first place I shared too, was at a women's conference, just opened up and told a little bit about our story. And then, you know, after we shared a couple times at our church here in Austin, we thought, gosh, we should probably tell our family just in case they, you know, watch the video someday. But, you know, we really didn't tell our family until we were a few years down the road and had come out on the other side.
Mm-hmm. And including your kids?
Including our kids. Yeah, we didn't tell our kids until they were old enough to know, you know, that's mom's picture on the brochure and, you know, what is that top? What's she talking about? So yeah, we told our kids a lot further along in the journey. And
okay, so when you're going through counseling and every week you guys go somewhere for a mom who's dealing with kids who, you know, she's in counseling or they're, you know, they're working on some stuff. What did you guys explain that you were doing?
Well, gosh, I don't know if I remember right. Well, when we first started, they were at school. So we went,
that's true.
It was during the lunch hour. And then in the summer, they went to my friend, my dear, dear friend, Lexi's house. And she lived two blocks away, and we were used to trading babysitting back and forth. And so
didn't seem that weird.
Yeah, I don't think they needed too much of an explanation for that.
Yeah, okay. Are there triggers today? How long has it been, firstly?
It was about 2005 when we started going through our first 12-week session. So we're a few years down the road. In 2011, we celebrated our 20th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, we are going to make it. Like, and not only are we just going to make it, like, it's going to be good.
Okay.
We're going to spend the rest of our lives together, and it's going to be great.
Okay.
So that was a real triumph. Yes, there are still triggers. Okay, here's a crazy story. My husband went to Las Vegas for a conference. Okay. And he had always been like, I will never go to Vegas. But he needed to go to this trade show, and the whole team from his company, they're all going to this trade show. And, you know, of course, we talked about it. And But then he calls me from Las Vegas and said, I don't know how this happened, but for some reason, I thought, you know, the admin was booking the hotel for everybody, and she didn't. So I don't have a hotel room with the team. Everybody booked their own rooms, and I don't even have a room. So he had to, at the last minute, try to find a room in Vegas, and he's by himself at a different hotel from everybody else. And yes, I did freak out a little bit, you know, but he called me like right away. So then I'm like, okay, what are our safeguards? What do we need to do? And I'm like, okay, well, you should probably unplug the TV. I've already done that.
Okay.
You should probably call your accountability partners. I've already done that, you know? And so he, even understanding his own vulnerability, really took steps to protect himself in that. But yeah, I did freak out a little bit.
Okay. Now, is it something that, at what point do you not have to do all of that? Like, when can you relax that? Or is that something that you never can?
That's such a good question. I know a few months ago or a few years ago, we were working on the budget, and we use accountability software. So we use Covenant Eyes accountability software. And what that does is every month I get a report, and actually my husband has some accountability partners who are men who get a report of all the websites basically anyone in our house has visited.
Okay.
I remember asking him, like, do we still need to do this? There's a monthly fee. So I'm like, do we still need to pay this monthly fee? And he's like, yes, and we will probably do it forever.
Okay.
And then I'm feeling just a little disconcerted that he was so adamant that, yeah, we need this accountability forever.
Uh-huh.
But I think that is such a safe place to be, to embrace your weakness, to know maybe it's not an area of weakness in my life now like it was 10 years ago, but that doesn't matter. This is a weakness in my history and in my life. And so I'm going to do everything I can to protect myself and to protect my family.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think we will have that accountability forever.
What would you encourage for a woman whose husband is not that gung-ho about being monitored? Because I can only imagine that some are trying to downplay it.
I think that's just such a painful place to be. And I think you really have to have some honest conversations about what you need in order to feel safe in the relationship.
Okay.
You know, hopefully her husband would hear her that, you know, this doesn't make me feel safe. And if we could take some of these steps and put some of these safeguards in place, I would just have more peace. I would feel more comfortable and more confident. And those are very valid things. And hopefully he would respond to that. I also think that it's a journey of coming to grips with the issue. For a lot of men, it's been a part of their life for so long. It can become like a non-issue. It's just a normal part of their life. And men have the ability to compartmentalize.
Hmm.
So like, this is the porn box, and it's not anywhere near the marriage and the family box.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality of what is available right now online, and the fact that it's not the magazines that my husband ran into as a kid, it is live streaming videos.
Yeah.
And increasingly more degrading and violent toward women. That's the reality of porn today.
Okay.
And knowing too that there's some great resources out there, and maybe her husband might hear her better from that brain perspective, you know, and really just challenging him, can you go without it? Or maybe trying to reveal the fact that maybe there's some compulsivity, and then there's some craving, and he really is depending on this in a way that could look like an addiction.
Okay. Yeah. Man, do you find yourself going to a fearful place a lot, or how did you combat that? Did you feel like you needed to like watch him all the time, or beat the truth out of him, or?
there's definitely a season in the past where you want to try to control everything. You know, that's just a way we respond to pain. And that's as old as Adam and Eve, you know, in the garden, like where God says you will desire to control your husband, but he will rule over you. Mm-hmm. So there is that desire to control that comes out of pain and betrayal, and it can really go crazy. You know, I know that was one of the things that kind of got my attention is I did become really controlling and saw that really manifest with my children. Okay. Knowing I couldn't control my husband. I couldn't watch over him all the time, but I could control my kids.
Okay.
I was still big enough and still strong enough to even physically manhandle them, mm-hmm. you know, and then realizing, well, what am I doing here? And I don't want to be that mom. I don't want to parent that way. And seeing that that was my desire to control manifesting more in my parenting than in my marriage.
Interesting.
But there is something that does come over you, and it's not helpful to a marriage that is trying to recover.
Yeah.
And it's just exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to monitor everything and, you know, like open the door really quick when they're in the other room, you know, or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to drive you crazy. And, you know, that's why I think that man has to have other men in his life who are asking him tough questions. And then ultimately, you know, as a wife, you have to choose to trust God and do what God is asking you to do. And know that when you feel like you can't trust your spouse, you can still always trust God.
Yeah, that's so hard, man. It is intense when that stuff first comes out and everything. And
no doubt.
I feel for the women who are in it today, you know.
I do too. Here's the reality of my story is that even though I was offended, I was a little bit offended that God had allowed this pain in my life. And I was not happy that he was okay with that. But at the same time, I also knew that he had the answer. And I really went to the Bible. And God was so faithful to bring scriptures and thoughts that carried me and helped me get out of bed in the morning. And so really, that's what I wanted my book to be. My book is not about my marriage. Mm-hmm. It's not about how we made it through together. My book is really just a daily dose of hope for that woman who feels like the rug has been pulled out from under her and she doesn't know how she's going to function.
Hmm.
You know, it's just a promise to stand on every day.
I love that. I'm so thankful that you took the time to create that resource. I'm sorry you had to go through that, but I'm thankful that it's there.
You know, there's a quote I ran across and I just love it. It says, "I love when people who have been through hell walk out of the flames carrying buckets for those still engulfed by the flames."
Mm.
And I feel like these are my buckets. This is my bucket. And yes, I walked through hell and I wondered some days if I was going to make it. I struggled to get out of bed in the morning. I had thoughts that flew in and out of my head, thoughts of suicide, you know, just so desperate and so sad and lonely. And yet I found my way through and God was faithful and I found all these promises and scriptures and I had them on sticky notes all over my house and in my car and in my wallet and the pantry and the refrigerator. And I had to carry those buckets to other people who are in the middle of it.
That's awesome. Well, I mean, it feels like a super weird question to ask, but we're out of time. So is there something that you just can't stop talking about other than porn, like your kids said?
Yeah, that's embarrassing. I know. It's like, I'm so sorry you think that, my four teenagers. Yeah, there's a really cool thing that, so when I had a book launch party and invited my friends here in Austin to come, and one of the things we did is I ordered a little kit from Soul Hope.
I love them.
So we cut out of those old jeans a pattern for shoes. So this is a great organization that makes shoes out of old jeans, and then actually tire tread becomes the sole of the shoe.
Okay.
And they make these shoes for kids in Uganda just to protect their feet from these sand mites that, oh, it's so sad. They get in their feet and they lay eggs and they get infested just really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So they go in and they clean their feet and they remove the insects and then they give them these shoes. I just love this organization. And it's fun, you know, to sit there and cut up pattern and decorate the denim. And
did you decorate it?
Yes, of course.
So good.
I made a pair of chevron shoes.
So cute.
I had to put some cherries.
Of course you
did. Some shoes, of course. God didn't give me a girl. I think I would have tortured her with cherry clothing. So
you might as well torture some sweet Ugandan children.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, Lynn, really thankful for you sharing your heart with us.
Thank you for the opportunity. Just glad to be able to share the hope that I've found.
So good. Thank you again. Hey there. Some really hard things, but I hope that you found it encouraging. I hope there's some things in there that you could take away. So what will your strategy be to struggle well this week? I would encourage you to write it down because it does up your chance of it actually happening. And instead of wanting to change all the things, I would encourage you to take one actionable step. So here's some possibilities that I came up with. Maybe you love the idea of a soul hope party and you would like to get some girlfriends together and make some shoes. It really is fun. Maybe you loved what Lynn said about how amazing her mom is at loving people very, very specifically. And you can start making notes if you can't remember about what people in your life really, really love. Maybe you need to have a difficult conversation with your spouse about some things that they've been up to or some things that you've been up to that just needs to be brought out into the light. Maybe an affair has just been uncovered in y'all's marriage and you are devastated. I know when it happened to us, I was devastated, but my husband was too. It is not a time that is easy on anybody. So maybe you go to affairrecovery.com like Lynn mentioned, or marriagehelp.org is a website that I strongly encourage. They have amazing resources there. It's actually a marriage program that my church started that is now nationwide. I've been through that program and it's just really, really good and helpful. Even if your marriage is good, you can make it better. So I would encourage you to go to marriagehelp.org if that is something that's even remotely interesting. I'll have all these things in the show notes for you. I did want to mention a couple other resources. Lynn told me about a website called educateempowerkids.com, and it just has all kinds of ways to have you have these conversations about sex with your kids and about pornography and things like that. So that's a great resource. And I put in the show notes, if you go to momstrugglingwell.com and then click on the podcast tab, this one will pop up. And I put a sermon. I am so blessed to go to a church that talks openly about anything you can think of. And pornography is one of those things. And one of our main pastors actually has a long history with pornography that he shares openly about. And because of that, the culture at my church is that really nothing's off limits to have a conversation and bring into the light so that you can be free from it. So I've included a link to his sermon on pornography and lust, because it's really, really good. So I'd encourage you to check that out. Today they were talking at church. I really love when the sermon goes so well with what the podcast interview is for the week. It's just a sweet little gift, I think, from God. I love it. So the pastor was talking about how when you're trying to make a change in your life and you're trying to be free from the sin that so easily entangles us, Paul talks about that there's two roles. One person has to ask for help, and the other person has to ask helpful questions. So the question asker, the person who's trying to help you, they have three things they need to do. They need to ask hard questions, but delicately. But do ask the hard questions. They need to share scripture. Why are they saying that this thing is true? Where did they get that from? The Bible is a book of wisdom. You need to speak from it as often as we can. And then also finally, keep in touch with them, because you can't just ask hard questions and then they never hear from us again. We need to care about them and follow through and kind of lean into the tougher places. But then the person who is trying to come into the light with this issue that they have, these are the things they need to do. They need to avoid getting defensive. When people are touching on our spots that are very uncomfortable, it's easy to get defensive, but that should be our big indication that they've hit a nerve, that we need to have a conversation about that situation if it makes us very upset. The other thing would be to share openly. Don't just share half-truths. That is more damaging to a relationship than anything. And also know what you need that person to do for you if they're going to kind of be walking alongside you in this journey. I don't know, guys, if you're in the middle of a really tricky spot, take a moment and pray and really just depend on the Lord and cry out to Him. The Psalms are all full of people crying out to God. He hears you. Psalm 40 says He inclines His ear towards us, like He wants to listen. So cry out to Him. He will provide you what you need. Look at some of these resources that we talked about today. Like, that could be God's provision in your hard time. And I just want to encourage you, because I've been there, Lynn's been there. Several people that I've interviewed on this podcast have been in the situation where if you feel like your marriage and your life is just like blown up, things are destroyed, it will not always feel that intense. And there is hope and there is healing, and not just patched up and like less jacked up than before, but like restoration is possible. That is what God does. So guys, I hope you're encouraged. I'm thankful that you spent this time with me today. I do pray for you guys on a regular basis. And if you have any specific prayer requests or just anything you want to say, connect with me. The best way is on Instagram, or you can also send me an email at hello@momstrugglingwell.com. I hope y'all have a great week of struggling well.
Talking about money is hard. People all over the world were taught never to talk about money, politics, sex, or religion in polite company. But on this show, my goal is to remove money from that list. And so I'm excited to bring you 50 Fires, a podcast about money and meaning from Blind Nil Audio and executive producers Chip and Joanna Gaines. Follow and listen to 50 Fires, a podcast about money and meaning with me, Carl Richards, wherever you get your podcasts.